Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I want to suggest to you a new theory called the falling tree syndrome. You know, there's an old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make any sound? I think the overall tone of that rhetorical question has to do with, does it matter? Does it matter that the tree fell and you weren't there? So if it made sound, would it matter? It divides up your mind in terms of priorities. Now, I'm going to come at this from one perspective, and then I'm going to pivot on you. It used to be the world was a mystery. It was a mystery because we didn't have information coming in from all around the world. And so we lived our lives, we did our jobs, we got up in the morning, put a little food in our mouth, went to work, worked, came home, put more food in our mouth, enjoyed time with our family, had our weekends off, and repeated Monday through Friday, 52 times a year, until we died. And the real life that we lived was all about our personal experiences between human beings, our family experiences, our friend experiences, our work experiences. And this is, that format has been the way it's gone, obviously, for almost 99.999% of the entire existence of man. But now we are in a consumer world, right? And what's interesting is if I say that we're consumers, you will go through, depending on what age you are, a whole different litany of thoughts about what that means, right? I think if you're Gen X and up, well, actually, let's break it down. If you're a baby boomer, consumerism was more like keeping up with the Joneses, making sure your kitchen had the most recent appliance and so on and so forth. You had maybe a pool in the backyard. Maybe you went through a few of those horrible waterbeds back in the day. Maybe you got a BMW if you were a yuppie back in the 80s. For a Gen Xer, it started getting more microtransactioned a little bit, right? We got video games where you would buy a console for your home. Not that this didn't happen in the 70s and 80s as well, but it became a huge product push in the 90s where you would buy a unit for $500, then you'd buy, 50 games at whatever price, $40. Eventually now it's gone up to like $80 a game. There were a lot more things you could buy. For the Gen Z, Gen Y, and the next one down, they are seeing microtransactions everywhere they go. But now it transformed from physical items like a video game that you could hold in your hand from the store, like GameStop, to downloading a quote-unquote free app on your telephone, and then you lose yourself and a few $100 of little tokens you buy and all that kind of stuff. Now you have digital purchases. You don't own albums anymore. You own a digital file. And just like I found out recently, somehow iTunes lost about 98% of all the files, all the songs I ever bought on iTunes. I mean, they got to have a copy of them. But they have no history of me ever buying anything from them. Movies, television shows. Again, thank God I was smart enough to push the download button because I feared this would happen and it did. Erasing thousands of dollars worth of purchasing. My only option is to waste my life trying to correspond with someone who doesn't care at Apple that this indeed occurred. Okay. But there's other types of consumerism, right? Fiction is a huge category of consumption. Back in the day, you would go to a play in the 1800s. Then when the radio started, you would sit and listen. You wouldn't live your life necessarily. You'd sit in the front room and you'd listen to a radio show, dramatize something. Then the television came. And that became even more addicting. At the same time, movies showed up. Movies without sound, movies with sound. Then the animated movies. My gosh, someone drew everything by hand that you're seeing. Consumerism. But still, there was a limit, right? There was a limit, even up to the year 2000, I think, in how many movies were released by every studio. Your channel choices on TV were still pretty much maybe 100 channels. In the 21st century, you now have television units that claim to have like 10,000 channels with only like maybe 300 of them that are active. Most of them repeats of channels that you can find 10 channels before that, right? Services like Netflix initially sent DVDs to your house so you could rent a show, see a show you missed. And then, of course, that all turned into streaming. And now we have countless streaming services, right? Not only does it cost you money, which is taking away your financial freedom, but it's also taking away the most prized commodity that you have, which is your time. The average human being now is ingesting several hundred shows a year. Fiction, the archetypes of fiction. They're pushing shows into their brain, which they don't understand, but it changes how they behave as a human being. No one needs to look any further than the 90s of Los Angeles to understand how gangster rap took the disenfranchised in the ghettos and said, you should be angry. And if you want to really be cool, man, you got to be hard. You got to carry a weapon. And if you really want to become a made man, you better have some kills on your rap sheet, right? In fact, you shouldn't care about killing another human being. That's what's important. Because y'all got to die sometime. Remember that line? We're decades into these archetypes now. Humanity is fatigued. But what's happened is the addictive patterns of consumption aren't dying. It's simply that we're running out of material to consume. Back in the day, you got some local news from people that you lived with. Maybe you got a local newspaper. But people would, you know, hey, did you hear what happened down the street? Did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? A little gossip stuff, some of it news. And then, you know, channels came out like CNN Headline News, which was 24 hours, about the mid-80s. All of a sudden now, there's a huge transformation in how much quote-unquote news you got about how the world worked. Now, none of us at that time knew about Project Mockingbird and the fact that everyone in those organizations was completely bought off and simply delivering a narrative to you. We have that word now. We didn't have that word back then, but isn't it interesting that that's what it was? If the 1970 Senate hearing with the Alphabet Agency that hatched Project Mockingbird is any indication of how far this thing went back, well, they bragged that they had 700 to 1,000 of the top media heads, the people that you looked at, your Dan Rathers, your Peter Jennings. They were all bought off, and they were all completely controlled. Some of them most likely knew what they were doing, and some of them simply thought they were reporting the truth. But as we've seen in probably the last 20 years, where someone had the patience to find out all the news broadcasts across America on one particular day, and they edited them all together, and all these news agencies and every local news station said the same exact script with as much phony passion as they possibly could to make you feel like this was important. We've seen it now. We know it's all a fraud. The 45th president of the United States was the first guy on planet Earth to publicly say that it was all fake. Nothing's changed. The addictions are still there. We now take in the content differently, depending on how awake you are. I know people that take it in lock, stock, and barrel every single day. They feel like they have been informed if they watch all of these horrible arteries of information. Like I always say, you're good at what you do. So these people are really good at bullshitting themselves. For the rest of us that want to try to find the truth in the craziness, well, we have an incredible burden on our hands. We're having to live in a pure arcs of intuition. But now I've said several times on shows for years and years and years that, you know, you really need to focus on your sphere of influence because that's what's really going on in your life. Whether or not something happens in Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Ukraine, Japan, China, you really can't affect change in those areas. The only thing you can do is watch something that makes your stomach turn, potentially, makes your heart hurt. And then that's being literally broadcast through digital means into your system so that you angst out. Remember, one of the causes of cancer is trying to convince your body that you're dying. It can't manifest a frequency of healing if it's constantly getting a frequency of dying. Why is it that the media is always trying to be a shock jockey nowadays, right? You can't look at any news source in the world, without them trying to grab your ad clicks by feeding you misleading titles, misleading headlines, I should say, giving you partial headlines that are bait. So you click inside. Well, this chemical is now found to cause cancer. We won't tell you in the headline that it's glyphosate. You have to click inside, get an ad, get 50 ads, see in a video run. Some agencies will write any article possible. When you go inside to the article online, they give you a montage video of like 50 subjects that have nothing to do with the article at large. And at some place in that montage, there's about 2 seconds of images and words pretending to be a part of the article that they had written. If you try to scroll down, well, it pops out and goes off to the lower right, little picture in picture for you. They don't want you to escape the fraudulent information. Well, now, what do we do in real life when we have a buddy who's the boy you call Wolf, the old Aesop fable? What do we do with people like that? Well, how's the fable go? The kid yells wolf to get attention. The whole town runs out and the wolf is not there. Then the kid does it 3 or 4 more times until the point where the village says, screw you. We no longer trust you. And then, of course, the wolf shows up and eats the kid. We excommunicate people who don't tell the truth. We do. It's just a natural thing because they're disrupting your life. They're disrupting your algorithm to succeed and survive. Because there will be times when you need to call wolf. There is something going on in your sphere of influence, and you need as much help as possible when that occurs. You want to be a person who infrequently asks for favors, so that when you really need a favor, people will say to themselves, wow, this must be serious. That person never asked for help. So I'm willing to help that person as much as I possibly can. These are important little things that we forget when we get so busy with life and inundated with crap. But taking care of your sphere of influence is extremely important, isn't it? It's interesting to contrast whatever time we're living in with a time that's perhaps 150 years before. Just whenever that question comes up, just contrast it to 150 years earlier. And if there's a gigantic difference between how we spent our time 150 years ago and how we spend our time today, you should be asking questions, in my opinion. But let's do a little additional test. So today is 2023. So go back to, say, 1870, just to make it easy on your brain. There's no television. There's no radio. There's no movies. People interacted. If they want a little bit of fiction, well, how would that work? They might go to a play, they might sit around a campfire, or they might read a book. Well, maybe they did a lot of that. But I'm thinking even before that, the printing press and people's educations were different. They probably lived their life a heck of a lot more. And the contrast between that time and this time is horrendously different. We have literally been convinced to brag about sitting on a sofa and watching a black mirror project images at us. Not living our lives. Now, we're all guilty of it. I'm definitely not preaching. I'm just bringing it up so we can all kind of take inventory to see if this is what we want to continue doing with our time. Now, if you work extremely hard and you're producing a lot of something, whatever it is, perhaps your dream job, there's obviously time to relax. There's time to just kind of do nothing. You need to let your brain just ease off all the problem solving, because you know tomorrow is another day where you're going to get back into that. If you truly do what you love for work, then you probably work 7 days a week, minus a vacation or some excursion. That's good. But now let's take 1870, and let's go back to like 1720. What were the differences between 1870 and 1720? Well, in terms of the pastimes of man, I would say not a lot when it comes to the archetype of how to spend time. You still had plays, books, and campfires. Didn't have television, radio, movies, internet streaming. So isn't it interesting? You know that if you keep going back 150 years and keep checking it from 1720, just keep going back, keep going back. Man has pretty much spent thousands of years with the same entertainment outlets, the same quality of the sphere of influence that they lived in, the bubble around you. You can draw it however big you want to make it, but it shouldn't be any bigger than you can see. I would say from the point that your voice starts to drop off when speaking in a normal tone, that's pretty much the radius from your being that draws the sphere of influence around you. Because when you can't be heard, you tend to walk closer to the target, bringing them inside your sphere of influence so they can understand what you're saying. In the first half of this episode, I want to really make sure that you understand there's a foundation to existence. Without a foundation, your house crumbles, right? There's that old Bible song that used to talk about that, right? It might sound like a cliche, but it's extremely real and extremely important. Anyone who's in a good relationship, even in a good business, you can always cite the foundation as good. But someone who's in a wonky relationship or in a wonky business, whatever you're going to describe to another human being to communicate that fragility, you're talking about a bad foundation. Your sphere of influence is your cornerstone of your existence. You must take care of it. Like someone is giving you a Fabergé egg, like your grandmother got a Fabergé egg from some European royalty or something, right? Some Russian czar gave it down through the family, and now they're giving it to you, and it's 2023, and you're realizing, oh my gosh, this thing is really priceless. So, I can't just store it on the coffee table. I can't just store it where people can touch it, or my kid who's three might find the shiny egg that looks really cool, a fun thing to toss across the room. No, you would build a place that's very safe in your home, if you're going to keep it in your home at all, to store that thing, because it's valuable and it's delicate. Our sphere of influence is just that. Why is it delicate? Well, because anything can change it. If it's at night and you're, especially a female, and you're walking from a convenience store or some department store out to your car, you're taking care of that sphere of influence. You're trying to see everyone in the shadows. In case some Ted Bundy's out there. Well, in those high contrast situations where you can absolutely see black and white in this argument, you get it and you do those things. But when it becomes extremely subtle, we tend to just feel comfortable. A lot of what becoming wealthy and retired is all about is sort of not caring about your sphere of influence. But I have all the money I need to pay my rent and my taxes and all that good stuff for the rest of my life. So why care about it? I'm working hard now so I don't have to work hard in the future. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if that's exactly what you want, but be careful with the atrophy of your brain. Those people tend to die pretty young, in contrast to those who work to the last day of their life. And happiness is hard to achieve in retirement. A lot of folks go into retirement, find out it's a bunch of bullshit, and they go back to work in some capacity because it's just too antisocial. Or it's not rewarding, even if they like being alone like a hermit. One of the ways I like to describe the sphere of influence is essentially the way that a village would consider its borders. I'm sure villages popped up in all forms of the world without any walls. And then you get a few greedy folks that want what you have, or they're just absolute troglodytes that have no sense of sophistication of any kind. They're not really humans yet. They see your fire and they want a copy of it. They see your women and they want to spread their gene to that. Or they just want to destroy things because they're idiots. Well, then came the walls, right? And the walls started out small and made of wood, and then they became stone, and then they became thick, and then they became tall. And what's interesting about it is that most societies that we find that lived inside walls became extremely sophisticated in relation to the other areas outside them. Why? Because they protected their sphere, and they were allowed to come up with sciences and arts and crafts and recipes to cook food, inventions to make granaries and maybe smelt metal. It was safety. But now if I said that your sphere of influence is going to evolve in that way, you may be like, what are you talking about? Well, anything that enters your sphere of influence should be by your approval. Now, obviously, when you go out in public, you're going to be sharing your sphere of influence with a bunch of other people's spheres. But I bet if you did an audit of where you go where you feel comfortable. If you go any place you feel uncomfortable, it's because you have to. Or you like a little bit of adventure, right? You might go in a bad area of town to eat better food or a particular type of food. You might go do the running of the bulls in Mexico or Spain because you like rolling dice with your life. Or you're a really sick bastard and you want to see someone else get creamed and, you know, run through by a bull. And eventually, hopefully, you grow out of that. I've seen all ages do it. But there's the physical sphere of your life. And most people don't play games with that because they don't want to be mortally wounded in some bad decision about being in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? Which I always say, you're actually in the wrong place at the right time, and that's how you get in trouble. But isn't it interesting that we don't think about the existential version of the sphere of influence? Your mind. If I asked you, do you believe that you're a bag of blood, basically? Are you just a bag of organs, and when you die, it's dust to dust, and there's no soul? Well, then your influence would be primarily, I would assume, primarily on the physical protection of your being, because that's all that you are in your mind. But to the degree that you believe that you actually have a symbiotic relationship between your soul and your body, which creates your mind, then you have another input on the little machine. And that goes straight back to your soul. So now you're something else. Now you actually have different metrics that you build yourself up with inside your own mind. Your spiritual influences. A lot of you watch what you eat. Why? Because you know you are what you eat. And so you're extremely careful about what you put in your mouth. You probably even spend extra money to make sure that there's that little label that says non-GMOs on the front. To the best of your ability. Maybe you don't brush with fluoride. Maybe you don't drink diet sodas. Maybe you don't use microwave ovens. All good choices. Then why, if you're going to take all those provisions on a physical level, why would you ever want your mind, even if you believe you're just a bag of bones, right? Why would you ever want to risk going insane or deluding yourself? Pushing paradigms into your brain that someone else invented to manipulate you. And this is where we get back to, if the tree fell in the forest, would it make a sound? Is it important that you know every piece of news everywhere it's said to have occurred? Now, we know that they manipulate things so badly that they'll say a building got blown up in a particular country that's at war with another particular country. And someone actually walks to that building in real life and takes a photo and puts it on the internet and says, this building's completely fine. What you saw was some fabrication, maybe using digital technology or previous or some other building that looks like this one. They said it didn't even occur. But what if for a second you believed the fraudulent claim? You just totally wasted your time. Especially if it got a rise out of you, especially if it made you angry. Because remember, your subconscious doesn't understand anything specifically. Humanity has falling tree syndrome. Humanity has convinced itself through sheer boredom, which is a lack of discipline within the sphere, to create anything other than what is being projected at you as a rewarding use of your time. They have basically made you an atrophied version of yourself, so you're constantly bored. And so you fill that boredom with anything, anything at all. And once you start doing that, you start deteriorating as a human being. I'm willing to bet that probably the majority of all failed relationships right now in the world, especially of first world countries that have this access to this technological barrage of crap that gets injected into your sphere of influence with your approval, either consciously or subconsciously, it's tearing you apart. It's tearing apart the values of being a human being. So that when you try to interact with another human being, your priorities are completely screwed. One area that we don't like to talk about, or we just don't because it's a little uncomfortable, is the sexuality of mankind. before you were constantly being told that you're not even a man or a woman, you know, that you can't use the X and Y chromosomes as a determinant as to what you really are in this world. Way before that, crossing over to the other side to find a mate was always challenging. And, you know, there's probably people that said, oh, I've always had no problem with that. Mm-hmm. Well, the very first time, it was awkward. Guarantee it. Even if you're a total Casanova at this present point in time. It was a hurdle. You had to figure things out. You had to learn some peacock dance to get the other side to look at you. Now, it's basically being pushed on you that if it's ever difficult at all, well, that means that you're not part of that group. And you ask any heterosexual man, what if someone walked up to you when you were having difficulties and you were nervous about approaching the opposite sex? If someone had come up to you and told you that you were gay, simply because you were having a problem. There's certain people that'll bite it off. Oh, well, that's, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, sure, I believe everything I'm told because I'm good at what I do, and all I do is inject myself with bullshit. And as a child, well, that's a kind of a two-tiered discipline, right? The parent ultimately protects the child. So they're the outer sphere, the home, let's just say. And within the bedroom, the child is trying to sort it all out. And without guidance from a parent to actually sit down and have a couple serious conversations from time to time, the child's just taking in whatever is allowed in the house. So if the parent allows it in the house, it immediately goes into the children. I think it's hilarious that parents that swear around their kids, they talk absolutely ghetto level talk, would ever be upset if their child started to swear. Now it's actually sort of a comedy thing that there's I just saw a compilation video on YouTube, which was, or not YouTube, on Facebook, where it was a compilation of children swearing. And the parents were just elated that their kids were dropping the F-bomb, S-bomb, I mean, really sophisticated uses of filthy language. Well, what job interview have you ever been on that you thought if you whipped out a few of those words, you're actually going to get extra qualified for the job? That when you leave the offices that you're trying to get the job at, they said, man, he sure used the F-bomb really well. So I think he's our guy. He's our girl. She's our girl. Whatever. None. It's like that old saying, said no one ever. So you get a talent that is actually going to work against you. Now, there's a time and a place, I swear. I was in a household where swearing was allowed if I was living with my father. He thought it was hilarious, too. It's hard to describe to folks, but society wasn't sophisticated enough to understand the full eco-cycle of the damage that that was going to instill on folks. It was a new, trendy thing to be the cool parent, sort of that best friend dad or best friend mother, to allow you to have all that levity with your life. In the end, we all end up sort of sorting it out. You know, we sort of filter it out. But now let's pivot, because we have a bit of a challenge on our hands now. The falling tree syndrome is something you need to understand to build your foundation as a human being. Because in order to engage the second algorithm I'm about to suggest, if you don't have that foundation, you won't be any good at this second phase of what is probably necessary and limited areas, okay? It's probably naive to say that the elite of the world, as they self-proclaim, the psychopaths of the world, that they have always been trying to gain more control over us. And quite frankly, they've been successful for thousands of years, for sure. There's been brief moments in time when man has been freed from tyranny. But a lot of people died to make that happen. And within, say, I would say 3 decades, they're back on top of us. I mean, the Americans like to, you know, tout the revolution, which was a very successful war with Europe. But the War of 1812 reveals that we basically took a knee and said, yeah, you can put your nationalized globalist bank in our country. And that was the pretense of why that war ended. They will always war against us, always, until they get what they want, because that's what children do. They are not sophisticated by any definition of the word sophistication. They are simply the first, their families were the first to amass wealth. And since there's always some Neanderthal that will take money to hurt other people, they always have an endless supply of soldiers that will do anything to get status and all the things that we work hard to get legitimately. Nope, there's a battle on right now. And it's interesting that in previous decades, I would say, well, it's really kind of exclusive to say maybe starting 30 years ago and going back, they were working in the shadows. And there were certain folks that understood what was going on, like a Bill Cooper. But most of us were completely in the shadows about things like the Bilderberg Group or something like that. But now we know, because it's now being talked about constantly, there's an agenda with a number on it. The number signifies the year in which they want to complete their agenda, which is 2030. Now it's in our face. Now we're seeing absolute lunacy around the world. Farmers having their land eminent domain taken away and threatened with lawsuits if they continue to farm in any capacity. We have gas ovens being described as poison centers, right? So it's poison center of the house is a gas oven. And what's interesting about it is you have obviously the most idiotic human beings being pushed into these public positions within every state of the United States and probably various areas of Europe. And they're not sophisticated. They have no scientific background whatsoever. So when they get to a podium and start talking and sounding like the person they've always wanted to be, sophisticated, scientifically founded, they love it. They absolutely love it. When they gag gas ovens all across the United States, which is the stupidest thing on planet Earth, or push us all into electric cars, they don't understand the damage they're doing, and they don't care. Their sphere of influence is all built on insecurities. So when we look at the global threats of the world, now all of a sudden, it's not really all of a sudden, but in terms of the life that man has been able to accomplish on this planet, we now have to pay attention to their global movements so that we can countermove. But now let's look at the sphere of influence paradigm that I'm suggesting here. I didn't invent it, but I've probably had a more definition to it than most. The one thing that we don't acknowledge is that, let's just say there's a news broadcast out of one of these fake organizations, or a glob of information that you're about to consume through a web page via a cell phone or your desktop computer, laptop, whatever, right? We need to view those. This is very handy for your brain to sort of wrap your mind around what's actually occurring to you as an individual. Imagine those packages of information being a sphere. They're not quite as big as the one that's that you have around your body. Maybe you even just think about them as maybe tennis balls or basketballs, depending on how much information you're about to consume. But they're coming out of the devices at you. And it depends on how much you take in that content, decipher it, believe it, or not believe it, as to whether or not the bubble bounces off your body and vanishes and pops just like, you know, a bubble from soap, or whether or not it embeds inside of you and becomes a part of you, potentially forever. You know what I heard once? Makes sense to me. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not true. But if you believe it, then it becomes a part of your guidance system. It becomes a part of your filter that you use to police your sphere of influence. If you believe something is true, then you'll typically take in that content ad nauseum, right? I believe this is true, so that if any other information is tagged on the bubble to be in this category, then I'm going to take it in as true as well. Same goes for if someone tags or you tag something as being fraudulent. If anybody tells me we landed on the moon, I can't take that information in. So I push the bubble aside, and what I look at is who created this particular bubble of influence? What time of the year is it? What other things are going on that caused them to create this bubble of BS and send it out to the world? These are like little poison pills that come at you. Unfortunately, since we know that there is an organization that's large, made of tens of thousands of shills, backstabbers, just the lowest form of human being, And, you know, you could say the ignorant as well. So there's to be some technically innocent people, but they're just as guilty as anybody in the end for destroying the world. Since they're organizing and we're not, then the least we can do as human beings is police our own sphere of influence as we take in their suggested alterations to how we filter information. You should believe this. You know, they say that repetition is the finest form of brainwashing. And oh my gosh, okay. We had an election in 2020 that if you did your research and you found the algorithms online of the software that altered things globally across every state in the union of the United States of America, you know that something really traumatic occurred. They told you that this guy was was the most popular guy in the United States. And then 2 weeks after, he's got one of the lowest poll numbers of any president ever, you know, in any month of their existence, either in a 4 or 8 year term. You don't get that shift overnight unless you've done something wrong. And, you know, of course, he did everything wrong since then, starting with the pullout of Afghanistan, right? They try to tell you that climate change is a thing. Okay. Well, let's just say the first 10,000 times you heard that, you did some science on that and you believe that it's not true. Again, CO2 in the greenhouse gas layer index is virtually negligible. You wouldn't acknowledge it exists if it were a few cayenne peppers put in your soda. You wouldn't be able to even see it if they showed it before they dropped it in. It's so tiny. But the repetition, repetition, repetition. You might get tired of the fight because it takes energy to fight. It's a bummer. And they know that about each and every one of us, which is why they will just try to break us down. All these people that have been stuck in interrogations for hours and hours and hours. It used to be they would find you usually after a good night's sleep or whatever, and they'd bring you into a room and you had plenty of energy to fight all their questions. And then they would just let you go. Just watch a bunch of movies from the 30s and 40s, right? When they dramatize this in films. Well, they won't say anything, right? Well, now what the police do is they wait till you've worked a full day. They come and get you just before bedtime on purpose. And they hold you for 14 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, knowing they can get a confession out of you because at some point you're going to lose all your faculties and you're going to become completely delusional. They won't feed you properly. They won't give you water properly. Oh, they'll say they did, but they don't in a lot of cases. And your body will just break down. It won't be able to fight back. If they let you sleep for 6 hours, you come back to the interrogation, you would have all the faculties you need to hold up another round until you slept again, ate again, drank again. So we know as human beings today, the falling tree syndrome is a double-edged sword. One, we have to protect our sphere of influence to make sure that we don't allow pollutants into our true physical boundaries of our life. But at the same time, because they're making plays all over the world, we have to pay attention to what those plays are. It sort of came to my conclusion last night, and this is sort of a late conclusion, but I haven't heard anyone else say it. I'm sure it has been said somewhere. I think if we were a fly on the wall for these organizations that organize themselves, okay, and we listened to their plan, we would hear, and this is what I realized yesterday, we would hear something to the effect of this. Somebody would acknowledge that no one in this world would agree to Agenda 21 as designed. 97% of the population removed from this planet, and the other 3% are kept basically in a concentration camp city. No one will be happy. No one will have any dreams. You will do what you're told or else, and robots will enforce it, so there won't be any compassion. It will be all mechanical. If that ever occurs, man will simply cease to exist. The only people that will be alive are the assholes running the machines, because man simply will not and will always refuse, I should say, to exist in that world. Man will just commit suicide. It will happen. But they're too stupid and out of touch to know that. So they say in this room, well, you know, we're trying to do a bunch of stuff that nobody's ever going to approve. You know, killing off most of the world, well, that's the first one. So what we're going to do This is what they say. I'm paraphrasing my thought process of them. We're going to hit them from every single angle that is conceivable. They won't know which way's up, which way's down, what's left, what's right. If it's not a climate change thing, it's a gas oven thing. It's a got to get rid of chickens, got to get rid of cows. We're going to run out of fresh water. It's every conceivable, oh, you're not even a boy or a girl anymore. And then we're going to fund all these organizations that will continue to push this agenda and other crazy agendas, right? Molesting your kids, all this stuff. We'll keep everyone angry, panicked, depressed. The pharmaceutical companies, if they're not killing you, will make sure that you try to kill yourself. And so they have essentially pushed out a bunch of hooks. It's almost like Hellraiser, the movie. And they're hooking into our flesh from every single angle of the room, and they're just pulling us apart. We're being tied and quartered, as they would say. And it's all because we're allowing in these bubbles of influence into our life. There's an old saying that is so very important to your happiness in this world, and it's called pick your battles. I heard that for probably 10, 15 years before I ever understood what it truly meant. And it's something that I will confess I'm going to continue to understand probably to the day I die. Because it's proprietary to every human being as to what a battle might be. One of the ways to look at this is to say, okay, a battle. What is that? Well, it could be a disagreement with a human being. Could be an employer you have a disagreement with. Could be the world you have a disagreement with. Yourself. And you have to start coming up with plans to win a battle, right? Everyone who's ever won a battle that was of any significance, there's a history book written about it. And I think we have probably some fairly legitimate documented battles. And, you know, there's some in your personal circle that don't need history books. You just know someone strategized beautifully to win a particular battle. Whether they be good or bad, you watched magic occur. It's the linear mind byproduct, right? But you have to figure out how important a battle is. How important is that particular battle? And do you have to engage in the battle at all? This is the thing I didn't understand at first. A lot of what this battle, what the statement means, I think, is that you don't actually have to bring the issue up and battle it. It doesn't mean it's resolved. Doesn't mean you capitulate to whatever's causing you the issue. You simply are going to focus on something else today. Now, most successful people in the world, if you talk to them about managing their time, they typically make it really simple. And I want to pass this to you. And this is something that I would need to have reminded to me from time to time, as well as just telling myself, which is of the time that you have on this planet. You know, there's a certain time that you wake up and a certain time that you go to sleep on average. While you're awake, that's when this stuff occurs, right? Most time. If you need to heal, go to bed. Take your medicine, go to bed. Right? Take your vitamins and go to bed. Let your body heal. Otherwise, you have to look at what you can most affect. Meaning, let's say you had three things that are these sort of battle categorized stripes in your life, right? Things you'd like to have some change because you don't like what's going on in those three different areas. Which battle do you pick first? Well, without getting into all the metrics of what it would take to fight any one of those battles, you simply just ask yourself, with the energy that you've got and the time that you have to fight any battle, which one has the highest likelihood of being fought well? Where you have your faculties, meaning your thought process is very clear. You think you understand the problem. Sometimes you have to convince other people to compromise or change their ways to win a battle. Well, sometimes you need to think out what you're going to say for weeks, months, maybe even a few years before you can even breach the conversation with them. There's an intuition with that. There's an intuition that you have about which one you're going to be able to do the most correction on. You study your battles. You figure out which ones are most important. If there's a secondary list and a primary list, well, let's just not even pay attention to that secondary list. Let's go for the primaries. Of the primaries, there's something called low-hanging fruit. That's the easy stuff. When you play pool, you'll have balls that are yours, right? Either stripes or solids. And a few of them are next to pockets. They're just ready to be bumped in there. And then you have the ones that are in the center of the field, or they're up against a rail. They're not by a pocket at all. And you have to work to get those things out of those volatile areas so you can get it to go in. Sometimes your ball is so close to a hole that the other player is likely to knock them in because they're completely blocking the hole. Well, if you're a good pool player, you typically work from the most difficult shots to the easiest shots. Of course, you want to get one in so you can go again. But in the end, if your balls are blocking all the holes, all the pockets, the other guy is going to have to sink one of yours. And that's going to block him and give the turn back to you. Just these minor logistics. Sometimes there's things that you can win that are very easy. Maybe take something off the secondary list because it is easy to solve. Let's just give you an example of a primary and a secondary. They're pretty close. Let's say you're in a bad relationship. It's toxic. Whatever's going on, it's just not good for you. They don't seem to care about you. Maybe you do care about them. They're not loving you back like they used to. Maybe they never did. And in the midst of that sort of depressing relationship, you gained weight because you were pacifying yourself with eating. And it was one of the positive things I did. Or I didn't exercise like I used to. I watched TV to pass the time, thinking that as long as I stayed out of their way, they might find love for me, watching me turn into a potato on a sofa. So the primary problem in that particular scenario is probably the relationship. Well, that's going to be a hell of a thing to fix, right? When you're dealing with another human being that has their own sphere of influence, their own ideas of what's good, bad, and otherwise, it's tough. But your weight is something you might be able to address. Eating less is the number one way to lose weight. It's nice to exercise, do yoga, all that kind of stuff. Yoga, I think, is the biggest scam for people who are saying that they're going to lose weight because of it. Now, yoga is a very spiritual thing, a very beautiful thing. It aligns your meridians if you do it right. It's an incredible thing. I love the paradigm of yoga. But people that are 50 pounds overweight saying, well, I'm going to yoga classes now. I'm sure sweating a lot as they push a pie into their mouth are just kidding themselves. So one of the easiest ways is just to curb your diet and start focusing on the positivity. Because if the relationship doesn't work, guess what's going to happen? You're going to end up out there in the game looking for a partner. And if you want someone who's overweight, well, then you be overweight and the two of you will get along great. But if you're not fond of the pounds on your body and you want to have someone who's, for all intents and purposes, with the vernacular of today, hot, well, then you better get as close to hot as you can get. Otherwise, you're not going to attract it. So sometimes a secondary battle is what you're going for. But let's get back to the global scheme of things. Again, vacillate between your foundation, sphere of influence, and the global sphere of influence. Because again, now we have an issue. The problem is that if you look into the forbidden planet called the Engine of the Krill, which is supposedly, if you look directly into it, you would die. So you always had to look at it through a reflective surface. Very cool movie, by the way. It can be like that. If you look directly into the fake organizations that are sending you the narratives of what's going on, you know that your likelihood of coming away with even a tidbit of truth is sometimes next to zero. So you're going to have to find alternate ways of getting other views into what might be happening in a particular area of the world. The best, of course, is having a friend that's involved with that particular thing and ask them direct questions, either through digital device or face-to-face. Face-to-face is even better. And then you'll find that trying to get the solutions in that manner is actually tough because you're going to say to yourself, well, is my friend intelligent enough to really know what's going on? Or am I getting another bias from them? How much do they ingest the narratives before talking to me? Are we on the same wavelength? And the only way you solve that issue is to talk to them more often. And at the deepest depths you can possibly ask them a question. You'll start to learn their instincts of what they are instinctually willing to believe and what they're not willing to believe. It's funny, in Los Angeles, with a lot of people that are behind the cameras for a lot of productions, it's funny. You'll meet people, I should say, that believe every single thing that comes out of anybody. They're fanboys of so many corporations, it's just makes you want to puke, right? And then you have folks that are sort of anti-establishment, can't believe anything ever, no matter what. They even look at you strange. So you have these two opposite spectrums, and then every once in a while you'll find a person in the middle. And they'll qualify things to you. They'll say, well, I'm going to say this, but you know, I don't know if it's true, but I had this friend here and his family member there and this, and they're connecting dots and they're giving you the empirical evidence that they use to come to the conclusion that they're trying to assert to you. Usually for me personally, that last one is the kind of person that I trust the most. I still filter though. They're little bubbles of influence in conversation to me. It's this process that is unfortunately necessary in today's environment. Imagine being in the 1850s. A spade was a spade, man. It was black or white. A person that wanted to do you harm was probably a lot easier to distinguish than someone that was going to manipulate you like a snake oil salesman that rolls into your little country town. You just kind of knew those guys were shiesty. And why do you know they're shiesty? Because they've been there before, even if it wasn't the same person. Whoever comes in selling products sells a ton of product to the gullible people in your town, and they leave, you never see them again. And then you see all the ramifications of the product. Either didn't do anything, kill people, hurt people, whatever. And so you build up that identification of their frequency. Again, one of the things I think that the 45th President of the United States has as a problem is that he talked in public, sometimes extremely rudely, about very bad people. I've said this before, but I think there's a lot of people that were abused in their lives and they don't want to say that they were abused. Perhaps it's their father, their mother, their brother or sister or something. And they just feel like if they admit that they were affected by those people, that they're broke human beings. And so they push it deep down inside. I saw this mainly in America through females. Females either responded really well to 45 or viscerally against. And what's interesting is the ones that responded well were happy people. I mean, their lives are just dialed in. Regardless of any judgment I might have for what they like and dislike, they're fit, they're bright-minded, and successful. And the people that hate the guy, they're weirdies. They're overweight, they've been depressed several times, might even be on some Xanax. Their kids don't like them. They're just tight asses in general. And their depth is very shallow. I would be utterly moved. I mean, this is an absolutely honest statement. I'd be so moved if I could meet a person who was really, really well-balanced female in America. Super successful, has a great, healthy perspective of all things, according to me, of course, who hated 45. I mean, we can all acknowledge the dude's shortcomings, for sure. I mean, I would never communicate like he communicates. He thinks that this works. I think that we can unequivocally say it hasn't worked for him. But a battle is raging. The battle's always been raging, so I would be careful in saying that it's just suddenly started, right? For a lot of people, they suddenly realized that the battle was there. But I will say this. The severity and temperature of the battle right now is probably as hot as it's been for a very, very long time. We don't know if history is accurate, but I would say, you know, there has been tyrannical moments in time. Maybe when the Crusades were crossing Europe and Eurasia, maybe when the Inquisitions were going in Britain and Europe and Spain for 900 years to push this paradigm of religion into their souls. Maybe that was way worse than what it is today. And you know what? Man survived. Unbelievable, right? But we've seldom ever had, if ever, a group of people who have actively succeeded in convincing tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, if not maybe a couple billion people to take a little drink that would probably end in their sudden death. Thinking that they were actually being given something that they had to have and it was all healthy for them. I have a teacher in high school that was online pumping that crap. And it still bothers me that he did that because I brought him the information that said that this wasn't going to be any good. Now, this is just what I brought him was the tip of the iceberg. What we're finding out now is devastating. Again, a lot of people got crappy drinks, so there's nothing's going to happen to you. I think when I was a kid, there was definitely a few adults that I dealt with who helped me understand that, you know, the thing about gossip that's bad is that it's none of your fucking business. That's probably some of the best advice. You know, a couple had an argument the night before and they were so loud in their house that somebody heard it, you know, and then that gets passed around at the beauty parlor and then that gets into the department stores and then people start looking at them weird, you know. Nobody wants to help. Everyone just wants to benefit and profit from their loss, right? Those who are depressed in their own sphere of influence because they have no foundation. The reason why I make episodes like this and the Linear Mind episode and others like this is for this reason. If you were given the opportunity, let's just say, to fix yourself, there's a question that comes up. It's like, well, if you're going to answer that question, yeah, I'd like to change myself. I'd like to make myself better. It would usually involve something like getting rid of your vices in some areas that waste your time and to turn on other vices that are very productive to you. Like maybe you used to play the guitar and you were really moving pretty swiftly through that education. And then you just stop for some reason. Life just had a bump in the road and it knocked the guitar out of your hands and you haven't had it in your hands. And you're like, man, if I had just picked it back up as soon as things settled, I'd probably be 10 times as good at playing the guitar as I am today. And just substitute whatever it is you love to do or would like to know how to do, right? The reason why most of us just don't flip a switch one day and get all those changes in our lives is we don't know where the control switches are inside of our brain. We don't even have the paradigms to find the switch. You know, when you're in a room and it's dark and you need to find the light switch, why do you find it? It's because you've already been in that room, it's your home, and you have muscle memory for how many steps it takes to get to the wall from where you're standing. And so when you come into a dark room, let's just say the switch right inside the door doesn't work because the bulb's burned out. Now you got to walk completely across your room to flick on a little lamp that's on a nightstand. It's odd how you can do it in the middle of the dark, reach up your hand, and my God, your finger goes right on the freaking controller. You flip it and the light turns on. And you, for a moment, you have this little celebration that, man, that's cool how that happens, right? You ever juggled balls or just thrown something in the air, but you keep your head up, you're looking up, and some reason, when the ball comes down out of sight, you catch it. Because there's so much capability in the human mind that you're just getting for free. Understanding how your brain works and how you frame things is essentially finding the switch in the dark. The Linear Mind episode's all about understanding whether or not you're living in the now or whether or not you have any strategery in your life, right? What I forgot to mention about Marshall McLuhan's research was that he really put forth the notion, it wasn't necessarily a specific moment in history, but he believed that when two societies would fight each other, the society that had the now mind always lost to the society that had the linear mind. So if you had an iconic alphabet, you lost. And if you had linear phonetic alphabet with letters that make words, you won. And the reason why is that you understood strategy. You had a pincer maneuver. I'm going to lure them into this cavern, and then I'm going to, from left and right, we're going to throw rocks on them. And they couldn't conceive of those two, you know, they couldn't conceive of the secondary linear procedure. And so they would lose. I'm convinced that that's exactly what happens in history. Protecting your mind is not easy. Protecting your mind is probably one of the most abstract concepts that a human being can contemplate, let alone understand, start to succeed in policing, and then master at some point. For me, I'll give you an example of a guy that I watched for, I guess, the better part of like 3 decades that blew my mind. And there's a bunch of these people. But Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was in the right place at the right time with the right brain, the correct brain, to help Steve Wozniak create the Apple computer and get that company started. Then they ripped it out of his hands by 85, by polluting his company with just a bunch of shills for Fidelity Investment. He ran off and created his own company. Then he came back. He came back to Apple when he was the owner and CEO of Pixar as well. So the biggest thing he did while he was making the next computer, in my opinion, was buying Pixar and getting Toy Story out the door, changing how we conceive of CG animation movies. It's no big deal today to have a television show with as much CG, if not 10 times as much, as Toy Story, made in a television studio. Well, think about how that dude had to police his sphere of influence. Did he care about the tree in the forest? Maybe. But probably most of the time, no. Except he would do interviews in the 90s about education. He couldn't stand the educational system in America. He was always focused at selling his computers to education, but that was initially a profit move because he understood they had budgets. It was the Elon Musk live off the subsidy program strategy of living. He's putting out a good product, so that's good. But by the 90s, he had figured out when he started having kids, more kids than Lisa, my kids, if they go to public school, are the biggest idiots on planet Earth. Wasn't that way when I personally went to public school, at least in the Midwest. But today, it's awful. Awful. There are so many schools in America that the kids show up to class and don't do anything, harass the teacher, threaten the teacher physically, follow them to their cars at night. And the good teachers quit. And the only teachers that stay are the ones that allow the kids to do nothing because they're no threat. They don't get followed to their car. Why? She's letting you do anything that you want, or he's letting you do anything you want. So somehow Steve Jobs was able to transition from one business to another, and for a long time, between Pixar and Apple, and still create amazing visions for the employees to create the best products they'd ever create. Landmark products that didn't exist. Toy Story was a landmark product in Hollywood that had never been done before in history. And then we get the iMac, we get the iPod. The iPod's responsible, I think, for making $47 billion in the first year for a company that was trading at $5 a stock 2 years earlier. That's focus, man. And that's what we all need. And it's all based on this foundation, understanding how our brain works. If the next time you go to sit down and consume something after this episode, and you start seeing that the spheres of little basketballs or baseballs or softballs of their information coming at you, and knowing that you've already invited it inside your 20-foot, 50-foot sphere of your life, and you have any level of caution where you didn't have caution before, or the caution that you've had for several years is now even more heightened, then this episode will have done what it's supposed to do. Give you more coordinates in the dark to find that light switch and flick it on, to expose the cockroaches that can then run because they're exposed. You'll take in less information, but the information you take in will have a higher integrity. It will be because you consciously let it in and not subconsciously consumed it. I'm pretty sure you feel me. I want to mention that we do have a Telegram channel, which I will tell you that if in 2005, when I started really waking up quickly, if I had something like this, I would have been utterly blown away and grateful. It's called Deep Thoughts Channel on Telegram. We only have 85 people on there right now. Let's see if we can blow that up a little bit. But the amount of information we're giving you on that channel that's pre-filtered is phenomenal. And remember, in Telegram, anything you see that you like, a movie or a picture, you can do sound as well. We don't do any sound, but you can click it and download it into your phone and then pass it to other people. If you're a good sphere of influence, because you've done your homework, don't let it go to waste. Get on Telegram, get on Deep Thoughts channel. There's plenty of other things up there that are great. You're going to have to filter everyone else's stuff heavily. It's a treasure trove of information. So just make sure you understand that when you get out there. If you're getting this exclusively on YouTube, please understand that on Rumble, there are chaos reports that come out usually once a month, and then they're destroyed. So if you don't hear it, you'll never hear it. If you come through podcast, you know that there are episodes that air on That one species of episode only airs on the non-YouTube channels. Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything's up there. To the Patreon and PayPal folks, thank you so much. You make it happen. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.